Hi, Saira. Welcome to the Big Unlock podcast. It is great to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited for the conversation.
Absolutely. We are quite looking forward to it. So we'll start with some very quick introductions and then dive right into the topic, which our audience is waiting to hear. I'm Rohit Mahajan. I'm the managing partner and CEO at Big Rio and Demo Consulting. And I will request Ritu to do the intro and then over to you, Saira.
Hi, Saira. Welcome to our Big Unlock podcast. We're really, thrilled to have you on the podcast and looking forward to a very insightful and engaging conversation. My name is Ritu M. Oberoi, and I'm the managing partner here at Big Rio and Demo Consulting, and also serve as the host for the Big Unlock podcast. Currently based out of Gurugram, India, and I travel frequently to the US, and really excited to have this conversation because, like, we were in the Bay Area yesterday and every second billboard was an AI billboard. So, this is what's happening right now.
Absolutely. I'm so happy to be here with both of you. Just as a quick introduction for the folks who are listening, I'm Saira Vaezi. I serve as the Chief Transformation Officer at Providence. And I've been with Providence for about 9.5 years in total, but the transformation role is relatively new for me. I have kind of dual responsibilities. I have responsibility for the consumer-facing, patient-facing front end for the organization, and we serve 5 million patients a year. So that unto itself, how we do our brand, our marketing, our digital consumer experiences to really meet the needs of our communities, ensure that they can find our services, that we can bring them in, we can retain them. That's a big part of what we do. And do it across channels, right? Whether it's web, mobile, proactive outreach, phone, all those types of sort of connected digital experiences. I also have in parallel sort of this newer responsibility around transformation, which started out as a bit of a nights and weekends project back when GPT became publicly available. And I just had a feeling that there would be a really important impact on our industry and that we needed to lean in. And so that morphed into a formal role around basically identifying and sort of being responsible for driving AI adoption, responsible AI adoption to get the maximum value for it in our system and do so in a way that keeps our patients safe, keeps our caregivers, we call all the folks that work at Providence caregivers, keeps our caregivers safe. And so that's been the undertaking over the last several months. And we're going to be really focused and sort of drive it across like a couple of, domains, like specific domains. We're not just going to do it kind of spray and pray, but really like focused. So that's what I'm responsible for. I've been in healthcare for a long time. Prior to coming to Providence, I was in management consulting. Before that, I worked in health policy and health services research. And I started out my career as a research scientist in med tech. So healthcare is obviously just something I love and is very near and dear to me and a whole lot of problems for us to solve. So the job is never done and it's a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The landscape is changing so fast that it's hard to keep up. But I think there are a lot of very interesting innovations coming our way. So how do you think about, Saira, the consumer-facing apps and consumer-facing experience, rather? And how does it make a big difference to the patient's experience as well or the patient care?
It's an interesting question. And, you've kind of separated consumer and patient, and we tend to do that as well. Actually, I kind of don't like the term consumer either because it has like an implication that somehow you have like the means to participate in the market or to buy services. And that's not really what we mean. What we mean is each person has agency over their own healthcare, their own decisions, and we want to support that. What we've really focused on is a few different things. The first is like, we really need to make finding our services and then transacting with us. So booking an appointment or paying your bill or getting financial assistance or financial counseling, like all those things should be a lot easier. Even other things like just creating an account. Like if you all recall, a lot has changed with the electronic medical record companies too and making it easier to create accounts. But back in the day, like you needed a special code and you needed to like have a clinic visit already. And it was just there were just lots of barriers to doing things easily. And so we're really removing those barriers as much as we can. Make it easy to find what you need, whether it's a physician or some information, content, the ability to do, you know, or just, and so taking out, like, just taking out the friction, making it easier. That's like kind of job one. And we've got some pretty lofty goals, you know, and things like online scheduling are still a battle for us, but we really aim to make sure that anything that is bookable has the option to be booked online. That doesn't mean everybody exercises that option, but that does mean that it's an option for them, right? It's just like they have the same source of truth. They have the same data for booking a flight or booking a hotel. There aren't like secret sources of data in different places and people don't opt out, right? So everything needs to be like available, same source of truth and frictionless. The second piece that we're really focused on is that each person is different. And so like, there's a huge amount of, if we really want to speak to people in a way that keeps them engaged, we need to recognize the personalization element and how important it is that, like, Sara have a different experience than Rohit, who has a different experience than Ritu. You know, like, we're not the same people. We're not the same. Yeah. We live in different parts of the world. We have different healthcare needs. I have a 6-year-old son who is a proxy on my account, right? So like all of these things are different. We need to have different experiences. And we know that that makes a big difference in terms of people staying engaged.
Yeah, especially, Sara, especially because you said you have 5 million patients that you're serving. So that's such a large number. There must be so much diversity in that. And it must be spanning many different states.
Yeah, exactly. We're up and down 7 states in the Western United States, from Washington, Oregon, California, Texas, New Mexico, Montana, and Alaska. So like very different states. Some have big urban areas like in Los Angeles and in Seattle. Some are very rural, like in Northern Alaska. You know, it's like a very, very, very diverse footprint and a lot of different types of services and people, different expectations of people. And then getting to that last piece is the expectation piece that we're really focused on from a consumer perspective is we have to engage with folks in the way that they're used to engaging, right? And so, and I know we'll get to a topic around AI and what we're seeing there, but conversational platforms, people wanting to do things synchronously, but not necessarily wanting to get on the phone, like, and helping them navigate in real life is another big area that we're really focused on from a consumer perspective. So personalization, frictionless, and helping people navigate. Like those are the big ones. And that can apply to anything. That could apply to marketing campaigns. That can apply to what folks see on our web and our mobile. That can apply to what their experience when they call into one of our contact centers as well.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And Sara, how do you approach this aspect of the patient engagement and consumer agent with product development? I know that you have a very thoughtful way of doing these things. What's some of the secret sauce that you can share, which leads to success in this area?
Yeah, I think that would be a great lead into, like, you know, giving us a success story maybe around this topic.
Absolutely. I can do that. And I'll give you a story that kind of will bridge the gap into like the AI work that we've been doing as well. I think like the main difference between traditional sort of just how you might turn on features and just try to make an experience ever so slightly better versus a product development approach, which is like, think about things end to end. It's not just about turning on a feature to be able to book an appointment, for instance. Mm-hmm. It's really about how do you actually even know, like, how do you get directed to the right care in the first place as an individual? Like, how do you make sure that that care is discoverable, that it's appropriate, that it really meets a person's needs based on their intent and motivation and preference and their clinical need? And all of that is, it's very data driven. It's very, in a way, precise, not perfect, but it's a little bit more precise than just saying, we're going to slap up an option of booking an appointment. Mm-hmm. Booking an appointment is a feature. A product development approach is really seeing that whole customer experience end to end and supporting from discovery through delivery, for instance, that booking experience. And so we've done a lot of product development to facilitate that end-to-end experience. And one of the examples I'll give you is, and I'll give you a small example, and then we can actually extrapolate it out to an even bigger example, which is we've built a conversation and navigation platform that helps our patients get their needs met without, in a sort of direct way, without them having to message their physician, And the reason why that's an important problem to solve is that we have 6 to 7 million patient-generated messages by like our patients annually that go to our physicians, and they go into like their physician, what's called the in-basket. And that physician in-basket has to be managed somehow. And that's a huge amount of, that's a huge volume, right? Yeah. And so those messages go into the physician in-basket and they have to be managed. And so what we said was, let's take a different approach. Let's not just say, how do we manage the message? Mm-hmm. That's a proximal problem. But how do we actually go upstream and say, why are patients sending a message in the first place? What's that experience? And we realized like they can't either find the content they need. They can't find the, so they don't have the information that they need, or they can't complete the task that they're trying to complete. Like let's use the appointment booking example or a financial counseling example. Like they don't know exactly what their bill means and maybe they need help paying. And so because of those things, like they're sending a message. Okay, but what if we could instead understand what that message, what like even a complex message mm-hmm. is asking of us, doing intent recognition, and then using that message, that intent recognition, to then activate basically agents. And so we'll get to like a little bit of this AI agent kind of world in just a second, to do self-serve and fulfillment of a yeah. task. And so it helps our patients basically get their needs met immediately, as opposed to yeah. having to wait 24 to 48 hours for a response. We've actually seen what we call message deflection up to 30%. Mm-hmm. And we're aiming to deflect approximately 2 million messages annually in the next couple of years. Okay. So it's going to be like a massive impact in terms of that patient experience of being so much better. And we couldn't have done it if we just thought about it very narrowly. Like, how do you reduce the message? It's not about just reducing yeah. the message. It's about that full experience. And that's really where product development comes in.
That's very cool to know, Sarah. So could you tell us a little bit more, like for the people in the audience who do not know this term, what is message deflection?
Yeah, it's essentially, and it's a little bit of a challenging concept because it's we are using data science methods to basically say this message would have otherwise been sent, but we know that it wasn't sent, so we avoided the message or we deflected it because we had another method for people to get their needs met. And so essentially, in a very simple way, our patients would go talk to a chatbot mm-hmm. and that chatbot would help walk them through the experience in a very natural language, conversational way. And mm-hmm. instead of them sending a message to their physician, they would get their need met in the moment while interacting with the chatbot. And we know that we can understand about 90% of what our patients are telling us. We call it goal conversion, meaning mm-hmm. we can actually meet their need 50 to 60% of the time.
I see. That's great to know.
Clogging up the physicians' inboxes and, you know, like you're saying, waiting
for
hours, which creates frustration for everybody. If the chatbot can understand the intent and serve them right there. So that's an interesting term we learned. Message deflection. Thank you, Sarah.
Yeah. Yeah. And Sarah, you mentioned agents, you know, AI agents. So let's get to that. We are talking about, I think, a digital workforce transformation mm-hmm. as well. So what are your thoughts around that? What are you seeing down the pike? Agents are already becoming mainstream, especially voice agents and some others also. And you also talked about domain specific implementations, I think. So what are some of your thoughts around these aspects?
So on the agent front, things are moving so quickly. So like if you had asked me this question 6 months ago, I would have said, yeah, you know, like I think agents are a huge thing and they're going to be very material and like a digital workforce is really, really critical. I still think to some extent that's true. And we shouldn't limit ourselves in a way mm-hmm. to only thinking about like basically taking what is currently being done by humans and just asking a computer to do it, right? Mm-hmm. That's like a very not optimized view of the possibility. Like we can be more creative, right? And so like a digital workforce, yes, they never get sick. Yes, they work 24/7, you know, that's assuming in a way, like what's kind of inferred from that statement is there's not like wholesale redesign, for instance, of like a process. They're just churning away at this process. And I think we have to combine agents with actual process redesign. It's not just about automating the yucky work or the dull work or whatever that nobody else that we think is low value. It's actually about doing things better. We don't want to just automate crap. We want to do things better. So So that's one big thing about agents, which I just struggle with a little bit and want to ensure that as an industry, like we're reflecting, it's not substitutive. You have to think about it more materially.
Yeah.
The other piece of it is there are things that like humans can't do that we should be envisioning for other, you know, like for it to be algorithm powered or computer powered. So I'll give you one example. Like when we do a marketing campaign, we look over our entire footprint and say, okay, we care for 5 million people, but we also are in communities with tens of millions of people, right? Across these seven states. And we can look across our communities and say, we think based on the data that we have that like there are 1,000 individuals that need this specific care, and we can make sure that we reach out to them and then proactively do outbound outreach and get them in to get the care that they need. Now, no human can parse through 10 million or 20 million individuals and look at their data and say, I'm going to find the 1,000 people. That is not a task that a person can do. It would take, you know, decades. And so we can actually do that at scale very easily now. And so I think just not like when we talk about agents, not limiting ourselves to just the things that we are already doing that we just don't want to do anymore.
I see what you mean. That's a very interesting aspect. Yeah. Ritu, you want to add anything here?
Yeah, I was just saying that, you know, Sarah's really hit the nail on the head. Rather than just thinking about agents to automate busy work or, you know, just doing the same things the same way, she's saying you look at it more holistically and think outside the box and think about new ways of doing things, which is what we also always talk about in our webinars, that, you know, generative AI is not just about doing the same things better, but just looking at things in a whole new way, because the technology is so amazing. And with, like you said, the, you know, summarization and the pattern matching, these are capabilities which just weren't there before. So you really need to leverage those to think about new ways to address a problem. So thank you, Sarah. That was very insightful. Thank you.
Yeah. We previously touched upon in the conversation about how you're leveraging data-driven approach, right? And with such a big health system with so many disparate, I guess, systems, how did you think about getting this data engineered in such a way that it would be useful for the applications that you're building or the products that you're building? Just wanted to go back and talk a little about that interoperability or the diverse systems and how do you stitch it together and what approaches do you take on that side of things?
This is a credit to our CIOs in the past in particular, that we've been on a multi-year journey to get some of our infrastructure in order and do some of the data platform work that we needed. Now, we didn't know that in 2022, we were going to have large language models available to us and that we were going to go through this big revolution. But we have done a lot of work on getting alignment around our electronic medical record. So we don't have, you know, 10 different systems. We're on Epic, and there's a tremendous amount of alignment around that. So that's one step. The second step is that we have been on a cloud migration journey for many years, and we have all of our data in the cloud. So we partner with Microsoft. We utilize Azure, and cloud is really like cloud computing is what has unlocked so much of the potential that we're seeing today. And then the other piece is that we have spent a lot of like many years on this data journey too. So we have an enterprise data warehouse. It's very sophisticated. They've done a tremendous amount of data engineering and unification, normalization, standardization of data, de-identification of data so that it can become usable for a variety of different use cases. That was all thanks to our information services, information technology teams over many years. And then in parallel, you know, we were doing a lot of the sort of consumer experience, digital, you know, experiences kind of work, and they converged, right? When, you know, in the last couple of years to really accelerate our progress, being able to then one, partner with application companies on specific use cases like ambient assistance for supporting our clinicians and documentation and charting, or the in-basket management use case that I referenced earlier. But we were able to do all of that because we had made the multi-year investments in infrastructure and data. So that's a really, like, in a way, there was a lot of foresight there to be able to do that from our previous leadership.
Very foundational work. Yeah, without that, you can't really
very foundational
big strikes. Yeah,
right, right.
So as we are getting towards the end of the podcast, Sarah, I would like to talk about a couple of things, and please feel free to add anything from your side as well. One, we wanted to talk about how you do innovation and incubation, and how do you look at startups which are bringing value to the table, and talk of some of the startups that have been spun out from your organization, very, very successful as well.
I will say that I'll preface this. Obviously, I have a lot of fondness and warmth in my heart for this activity, but it is a very tough thing to do. And it's labor intensive, it's resource intensive. And so a lot of systems don't do it because they either don't have the scale or they haven't built up the capabilities. But many years ago, when we were in more stable financial times, we were able to look, and thanks to the foresight that we had, we were able to say, like, there's missing technology, missing infrastructure out there that prevents us from successfully, for instance, matching supply to demand for our patients who need care, or delivering a truly personalized experience because we know our patients and we're able to sort of create personalized experiences around what we know about them. And so in those two cases, we went really deep into these problem areas. We had a team of folks that could build technology, like think startup folks or like big tech folks, like product managers, engineers, UX, UI, product analytics folks. And we built two companies. One was called DexCare Health. DexCare, we spun that company out in 2021. And that's exactly what they do. They do supply-demand matching for on-demand care. So essentially help folks find the care that they need, like make sure it's discoverable, direct people to the right venue or modality of care, and ensure that there's capacity there. So you got to, you know, manage the supply side. And so DexCare was spun out in 2021, and they've been sort of off and running and doing amazing work. We also spun out a company last year, 2024, called Praia Health. And Praia is focused on personalization and driving engagement through knowing an individual and giving them exactly what they need, like in terms of like what's relevant to them, as opposed to just sort of like a more vanilla or generic approach. So we built those two companies. They've raised venture capital in the tens of millions of dollars. And we continue to utilize them to power our consumer experiences in the system.
That's great. That's great. So, Sarah, would you like to talk a little bit about what you see in the future and in the may, perhaps in the next year or two? You know, things are changing fast. But what are some of your thoughts about the generative AI, the LLMs and the agentic AI and all these things? How does one approach that?
You know, if I knew that part, I would probably put more money into the stock market, or any money into the stock market. I don't know. I am very wary of that, especially how quickly things are moving. Yeah. But there will probably need to be some breakthroughs in the not too distant future, more focused on sort of the energy that's needed to power these very sophisticated and energy hungry models. And I think we're going to get more efficient too, but we do have to solve some fundamental like energy problems. And I think that that's a big focus area for a lot of folks. If we don't do that, we can't really do that much more innovation because there's just too much consumption of GPUs out there. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I do think that we will see more of over the next couple of years, just on the kind of core AI, like software side of things, is a lot more. One, there's just like tons and tons of like little solutions out there, and some of them are getting like massive valuations for unclear reasons. I think we'll see a little bit of a normalization around that. And then I think that we're going to start to see more folks focused on just sort of like the wholesale redesign of business processes, business need, data need, you know, that aren't just technology oriented, but focusing on essentially like, what does it look like when it becomes AI native, right? Versus just substitutive. Yeah. I think we'll see a lot of that. I'm very curious, like in some domains, I am curious to see what's going to happen with the ambient assistant solutions out there. Yeah. They're at massive valuations, and a lot's going to change, I think, for those companies in the near term. I'm really excited about the monitoring and observability space. Just like, how do you actually know what's going on in a use case before you test it? Before you deploy it, you got to test it and validate it. But then in runtime too, like if you're trying to run an unsupervised, non-deterministic model, like you better have some system in place to make sure it's not going rogue and doing the wrong thing. So I think there will be some interesting advancements there. I am very, very interested in a lot of the workflow automation solutions that are coming out. And just, I think the tool sets themselves are going to improve a lot to free folks up to build like the use cases that they want themselves. So I'm very excited about that as well.
Awesome. Awesome.
I just wanted to ask a last question, which was more like, you know, on the philosophical side, because just a year ago when we were doing our webinars, we were talking about human in the loop, you know, AI is here to augment, not automate. And within a year, we've gone, you know, full 180. And now we're saying that, you know, it's agents, it's going to be totally autonomous. They're going to be doing things on your own. So like you said about rogue agents or, you know, shadow agents, how do you feel about, you know, sort of ceding that kind of control to, you know, an agentic workforce, which humans may not be completely in control of?
Frankly, I think fighting it is almost like fighting gravity. And our job is to make it as responsible and humane and ethical as possible. I'll give you another example, which is like folks often used to say, like back before we got really comfortable with sharing our own personal data all the time, folks would say things like, oh, I think that each individual needs to own their own data. And that's like a fine statement in a way, but it's like a very facile statement. Well, what does that actually mean? And like when you actually get into it, nobody owns their own data. Companies own your data and they do stuff with it. And you have agreed that it's okay, you know? Yes. And I think we actually missed the mark on doing it humanely and ethically and with integrity. And in this case, let's not miss that mark and say, okay, we know it's going to happen, that we're going to have huge displacement, huge amount of like change economically, from a workforce standpoint, from an experience standpoint, it's going to happen. How do we do it right?
Yeah.
Great. Thank you, Sarah. Great answer. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Sarah. This has been a great interaction. We really appreciate you being our guest on the podcast.
Thank you.
And I hope the audience will like it as well. So thank you,
Thank
Sarah.
You.